Hi everyone, I'm Eniola Hu.
And I'm Tayo Bero, and you're listening to To Be Continued, a podcast where Nollywood and real life meet. Okay, so I'm really excited. Eniola, I've been telling you, I've been talking about this topic kind of for like the past few weeks because I've been so excited to do this. So I'm really happy. I really have. So I'm really glad we get to do this. So this week's episode is about criminals and criminality in Nigeria. That's the theme of this week's episode. And just so you guys know, this time around, Eniola has no clue what the story is. She has no clue what the movie is. And so I'm going to tell her, like, she's coming into this, like, blindfolded. So, okay. So I really wanted to do this story because the first time I actually came across Oyinisi and the story of Oyinisi was on Twitter, and somebody had done a thread about just this criminal who was very active in Nigeria in the 1970s, and his basically his MO was carjackings, bank robberies, heists, and that kind of hold up, that traffic robberies. And so he was a very famous, they call him like Nigeria's first celebrity armed robber, first celebrity criminal. And I do want to ask you about this because we know there's a culture of kind of like these notorious criminals like Shinorambo, Lawrence Anini. So apparently Oyinisi was like the first of them.
So, okay. So when you were talking, I was like, let me Google this guy. And then I was like, wait, I know that first name, Ishola Oyinisi. So now that you say it, like, it rings a bell. And there was this guy, he wasn't as famous, but they used to call him Lightning, or I think Thunder. But he was on the news one day, and like, I was shaking the whole night when we were watching, because he snuck into this woman's house. Apparently he like came in naked so they couldn't catch him and oiled his body really good. Yes. And the reason that she saw him was like when she was taking a shower, she had come out. She said something just kept telling her to come out the bathroom because her daughter was sleeping in the room and there was no light. So she said something just told her, come out of the shower and go and check on your daughter. And she like stopped her shower. Yeah. And just stepped out to check on her daughter. And there's a naked man standing there. So I remember seeing this guy on the news. I know. I was freaking out for days. Like, I wouldn't open our kitchen cupboard.
I can imagine. And you saw this live. Yeah.
I saw this live, and the news anchor was like, so are you telling me you can disappear? The guy said, yes, I can disappear. She's like, so why didn't you disappear when the neighbors caught you hiding in the kitchen cupboard? Because when the woman was looking for him, he hid in the house. So at this point, she starts screaming, neighbors, help me. So they find him in one of the kitchen cupboards. Imagine finding a naked man in your kitchen cupboard. Like, so he was saying that he's Lightning, somebody's Thunder, and that he can, two of them can work together, and they work. And so we used to live in Ikoyi, and they're like, oh, we work on that water. You know, the water between Ikoyi and VI.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm finished. And our house too was near the water. I said, this one wants to kill me. You want to kill me. Like, and then the craziest thing was later that week, we bought Suya, and the Suya, the rapper I came in, was the news article on this guy. My dear, I did not say my word. I was so
don't kill me.
So that's the kind of thing that, you know, I knew about. And then when we're much younger, there was this guy called Shinorambo. I think he's the one. I don't know if he's him or Oyinisi that reversed to Ibadan. One of them reversed.
I think that was Shinorambo. Okay. And Shinorambo's story is about, anyway, we'll get more into it, but the story is about the way that jazz was used, and the way jazz came into these like crimes and their criminality was also very interesting. Like Shinorambo's too, I think I heard, he said he had a whole, he used to like disappear into a tree trunk, like he had a whole world inside that tree. Like, I remember there were all kinds of crazy stories from these, from these criminals. Wow. So yeah, he was definitely one of those people, and apparently he was like the first of those famous criminals. So I'll go back more into the story of this like later on, but I just want to talk about the movie that was made about this. So I went looking to see, so after I saw this on Twitter, I went looking to see if there like anyone had made a movie or if there was anything like written about it, and I found this movie that was actually made in 1977.
Wow.
By this Nigerian filmmaker. It was made just a few years after Oyinisi, well, spoiler alert, he dies, but a few years after he died, this guy tried to make a movie about, or did make a movie about Oyemisi. So, but that isn't the movie I watched. See, this story is so crazy because I couldn't even watch that movie. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you why I wasn't able to watch the 1977 movie. So the movie that I did watch was now a movie that was made very recently starring everyone's fave, my boo, Odunlade Adekola. And Muyiwa Ademola. So the second guy in the movie was Muyiwa Ademola. So you probably know him, or if you can look this up right now. But when you see his face, you remember who it is. But
of
these
course
two,
I know who this is.
These two clowns. This is what I don't like about Odunlade. I shouldn't be laughing this much in a movie about a criminal, a killer. But yeah, that's the magic of Odunlade. So Odunlade was in this movie. So he plays Oyemisi in the movie. And so in real life, the legend has it that Oyemisi would call himself Dr. Oyemisi. Like, that was just his, I guess, nickname. But in this movie, they kind of took it a step further and made him an actual... So in the fictionalization, they made him an actual doctor, like, in the movie. So it starts out with... And see, this is what I love. So this is a Yoruba movie. So it's a specific type of Nollywood movie. And so this movie starts out not with the actual story, but it starts out with somebody telling somebody else the story. So this is, so you know that tradition of like Yoruba movies where, so I'll just kind of describe it like, yes, like a movie, like a story in a story. So basically the movie starts out with this small boy. He goes, I think he did something bad. He like stole something or he took something. And then his parents, in order to warn him and teach him a lesson, send him to his grandfather's house, who then tells him the story of Oyemisi. So that's how we now get into the actual movie. So it's like a story in a story. But I actually kind of, you know what, I was just thinking about this, like, and I know it's something that's very peculiar to that Yoruba kind of filmmaking tradition of, there's an intermediary between you and the story, which is the person who is telling the story, who is telling somebody else the story that you're now watching on screen. And I almost think there's something deliberate about that, because Nigerian movies in general, Yoruba movies included, often tend to be very didactic. Like, there's a lesson you're supposed to be learning at the end of this. And it's like, so don't forget that you're supposed to be learning a lesson. And I'm going to remind you that this is a lesson by literally putting somebody there to tell you that this is a lesson, or to tell you that this is a story that's being told. Yeah, so the boy does something wrong, and then we start to hear about the story of Oyemisi. So the story starts out with this woman who's trying to give birth. So I mentioned Oyemisi was, in this story, was a doctor. So it starts out with this woman who is giving birth, but then the baby was, I can't remember what the word is for, like when the baby is inverted, basically the legs were, in the womb, the legs were down. So the head was up and the legs were down, and this woman like was in distress. So they brought her to the hospital where Oyemisi worked, Oyemisi and his partner, JB, who was played by Muyiwa Ademola. So she's dying. So this woman is actually dying. And so Oyemisi decides to, and this is where you find out that he has fetish powers. He uses jars to try and bring out the baby. But he instead, and this was where this movie got sick, he pulled off the baby's head by mistake. I don't even know how that happened. And they really showed it like a baby doll's head, neck, whatever. It was disgusting. They didn't need to do that shit because it doesn't, and they don't even do it well. So I was just like, now you made me gross out for no reason. Yeah, like
they're not able to screaming to distract from the bad
blood, and there was just it was a lot. So anyway, so that was just the main fuck up that happened when the movie starts. So after he pulls the baby's head off, like, that's kind of fucked up. So his dad comes to the hospital to see him, and he warns him about using jazz. He's like, you shouldn't be doing this in the hospital. Like, you are a doctor. You shouldn't be using these powers. And that's how you find out that the dad gave him the powers. So he warns him sternly, like, don't stop doing this. Stop using jazz in your medicine practice and all that. He's not really listening to him. He feels like stifled, like, why should people be telling him not to use his power? There's even a scene later on where like this pastor or somebody, like a man of God, comes to see him, and he basically starts doing like magic tricks to show him how powerful he is. Like, he told a Bible, and you know, this is where he told a Bible to like arise and go to the other side of the room and fall down, like, you know, this kind of crazy thing. And this was one of my favorite parts of this movie, because this is where Odunade thrives. Those crazy grand displays of, like, this is, there's nothing that is really happening here, but he has made it into this huge thing. Yeah. So he told the Bible to stand up. The Bible now came up from the table. The Bible that the guy brought, he flung the Bible to the other side. The Bible too now fell. It was just crazy. But I loved it. It was like, it was just classic Odunade energy, like just over the top, doing too much, but it was amazing to watch. So he's just like, you know what, fuck this doctor thing. I don't have time to be a doctor. I'm too powerful to be kind of doing this, and then you guys want to be controlling me. So he decided he was just going to turn this into a criminal enterprise and just become a jazz criminal. So that's where his reign of terror kind of actually starts. So he assembles a gang, like the typical things. He has all his boys that work for him. He starts robbing people, stealing, doing the carjacking, but it was kind of like very much a like mafia of sorts, like a real criminal enterprise. Like, he wasn't just a small boy he wasn't the runner. He was like boss, and he had people like doing robberies for him, or sometimes he would even show up at the robbery in a suit. So that's, he starts his whole reign of terror in, and so this just overlaps with kind of what was happening in the real Enosi story, which was he was terrorizing Lagos and Ibadan, like that kind of environs. So there's this female police officer who gets put on the case.
Funny enough, Oyenisi looks just like Shino Rambo in the photos. So weird.
For real? I don't know what Shino Rambo looks like. Do you know?
If you search them, like if you search Ishola Oyenisi, you will see Shino Rambo. You will see...
Oh, for real?
Yeah, they all look alike.
I'm scared. I don't even want to know. Do you know I'm scared to
Google? You can't be scared.
I'm scared to Google Shino Rambo. Like, I don't even want to see. Is he alive?
No. All of them are dead.
So the actress is Kemi Afolabi.
Okay.
So if you look up, I love her. Okay. So yeah, the actress who plays this female police officer is Kemi Afolabi. And at first, so Enosi obviously tries to do his stupid thing. He tries to get her to be his girlfriend. Oh. All these kind of, he tries to bring her in. You know how criminals obviously will try to pay off the police at first, like just the typical things that you would do, but she wasn't having it. And so she found a way out of that anyway. And so she actually decided to go and dig up his real life story and find out what, like, where this guy comes from, like what his deal is. So she finds out from his mother that it turns out Oyenisi's parents were school teachers, and they weren't actually his real parents. So they found him one day like crying by himself because his actual parents couldn't afford to send him to school. So Oyenisi's parents in the movie, the quote unquote, so the jazz guy, the dad who comes to the office in the beginning, isn't his real dad. It's somebody who adopted him when he was younger, with along with this wife who the police officer is now talking to. So the wife lets the woman cop know, like, you know, we found him one day and he was crying because his parents, he said his parents couldn't afford to send him to school. Now, that detail is true because apparently during one of his last interviews, Oyenisi had said that the reason why he went into crime and started doing robbery was because his parents couldn't send him to school, and he couldn't get an education. So he couldn't get like a good job or whatever. And that was what made him turn to a life of crime. So that detail was actually true.
So he couldn't. So it was pretty much poverty that made him an armed robber.
Yeah, like, basically.
Okay, lack of opportunity. Okay, I'm just really surprised. Well, I'm sure that has always been a thing, but you know, you hear all the stories about Nigeria being much better in those days, and the high schools I went to, the principal always said, you know, in those days in Ife, we had milk fountains, we had soda fountains, and you had a whole chicken for dinner. Yeah, he's like, for someone like me, my parents were so damn poor. Like, they couldn't afford anything. So for me, school was my first time of getting to eat, like, 3 square meals. Like, that was the first opportunity I had in my life, to eat 3 square meals and have unlimited milk. Like, what is that? He's like, we didn't we couldn't even fathom it, where I came from. So I find it really weird. I mean, I'm sure, again,
because, and I think, shit happens. Yeah, and I think this wasn't the atmosphere of the day. It was just this one guy had a shitty, like, whatever, upbringing or childhood. It was just more, this was how he decided to handle himself. So his parents are like, you know what, we have to take this boy in. If he doesn't, this kind of child, if he runs away, and they said this in Yoruba, but basically they said, this kind of child, if he runs away, they won't be able to catch him again. So they need to take care of him. So they decide to take him in, and they bring him in as one of their sons. He lives with their other kids. And so the one thing they did say was that he was an Ojukokoro. So he was like a greedy child. And this is important. The dad was a herbalist, like I mentioned. So even from back then, he already dabbled a lot in the supernatural. So the mom did say that anything that the dad did on himself, any spells of protection he did on himself, he did it for Inusi too. Any incantations he did it for the boy too. So one day the dad prepared something, a concoction that was supposed to heal somebody of petty stealing. So it was basically, if anybody eats, the person who eats this is somebody who already steals, like they have a spirit of stealing in them, right. And this will cure them. Oyinusi with his ojukukuro, he saw it and went and ate that thing. So because he ate it, and it wasn't meant for him, it was meant for somebody else, and it was meant for somebody who steals. So because he ate it, it backfired. The dad wanted to die when he heard that Oyinusi had eaten it because he knew it was over. He said, anyone who isn't a thief and eats it, from that moment, they're a thief for life, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. There's nothing anybody can do to cure them. There's no reversal. There's no way to turn back from this. So, two things. First things first, the concoction was in the food. And I just feel like I should mention, I know we're going to do like a future episode about food, but it just made me think about how food is always employed as the vehicle for these diabolical things. Like, why was the thing, something that you know is so potent, why was it just sitting there in a plate of food? Like, that was something that was meant to be for somebody else, and that's so specific. And why, like, I'm sure if it looked like a charm, he wouldn't have touched it. I'm sure if it looked dangerous, or if it looked like it was something fetish, he would have been more hesitant to touch it. But because was hidden in the food, he, like a normal child, he went and ate it. And also, second thing, like, why is everything so fucking irreversible and stupid? Like, why is that now the final thing? And I just think that's what confuses, that's something that has always confused me about just the nature of like fetish things that go on in Nigeria. Like, some things are arbitrarily reversible or irreversible. Like, they can just put a spell on you and say, this, there's nothing that can ever change this. But then maybe somebody will show up later and say, oh, this might actually be the antidote. Like, it's just confusing.
Do you know something? I have some, like, so even throughout, like, this episode, I just have some, like, thoughts already regarding, you know, what we consider diabolical or fetish or whatever. I think that there are also a lot of things in, like, the popular religions, the Abrahamic ones, that are irreversible. For example, the sin of Eve. Till today, apparently, we're still suffering for it. Till today, we're still... we have periods because of that. Me, I'm not really into all that stuff, but so we're told, right? You know, I know that even me too, when I was younger and my only view of traditional spirituality was Nollywood, I used to be like, how can they just curse you and that's it, you can't change. But if you think about it, there are many people who come from Abrahamic religions and they have certain like diseases, mental illnesses, terminal illnesses that stick for life, and they end up saying, well, God knows best or whatever. So in a sense, we can call that a curse too, and we can call that a final, like a verdict, like that's a verdict from the universe, from the Most High, and that's where it ends. So I also feel that a lot of all these things, like for example, all this story they are saying, I don't believe it, I won't lie to you, like all this, like they went to go and putting stuff in food, that makes sense, because I think that if you create something that people are supposed to ingest, it's easier to ingest it when it's in something palatable, right? So I remember when we're young and we'll struggle with like medicine, they'll put it inside. Right, so I get that part, but also even the idea of like creating potions and stuff like that, I think everybody has symbolic things to symbolize and physical ways to interpret their spirituality. But I won't lie, I think that traditional ones get the worst rap because, you know, I personally believe it's colonialism, but it's that colonial mindset that we kind of get hung up in. But I also believe that some of the things we consider jazz, they're just ancestral wisdoms. For example, hiding in a tree, maybe that's something that's like illusions. Have you watched all these illusion movies? I don't know if you've seen this movie, The Prestige. It's about magic. You see The Prestige, right? A lot of what we consider, I remember when my mom used to tell me about Pele, she'd be like, oh, he cut someone into half and put them back together. Everyone was screaming. But it's all illusion. So it's And, you know, if even this guy, Darren Brown on Netflix, he's an illusionist. Yeah, so some people have mastered these things. And I think that when it comes in Western packages, it's sanitized, we accept it as okay. But when it comes in our traditional package, like, hey, juju jazz. But these are things that are taught. These are things that are taught to generate. Yeah. Some people are masterminds. Very intelligent with those things. So for me, that's how I view a lot of these things. I don't see it as really that much different from another. And
I think I agree with you in the sense of just the way that this is all the same shit being repackaged. Like, I absolutely believe that. But I still believe that there's, like, I believe some of these things are efficacious. Let me not lie. I believe, like, there's some things that are illusionary, but I definitely believe that there are, like, some of this shit is real. And again, like you say, obviously, thanks to the effect of colonialism and the way, like, just the way we talk about anything that is in, that is indigenous to us or that is, like, to us is very different. But I think, like, a lot of these stories about jazz and these things they do, I believe that, Shinorambo probably was saying, oh, whatever, he went to hide in a tree. Like, that might have been a just his way of exaggerating the fact that there was actually just a big tree he found a way to hide, and hide behind. But I believe that a lot of these things do happen. And I just think, again, it's part of the reason why people are so hesitant to believe that these fetish things, they do exist and they do work, is because of that bad rap that they've gotten. Because I think the way that supernatural things are packaged in certain contexts, like Christianity, is always positive. Like, you never hear anybody, you don't hear that people use their powers, their healing powers, for bad. Like, you can't use a healing power for bad, for example. You wouldn't use holy water or anointing oil to do something bad. Like, you wouldn't do that. But every time we talk about, most of the time when we talk about, like, African traditional religions or, like, anything that is, like, indigenous to a non-Western culture, is always in a negative way. It's always this type of shit that you put something in a, you put a concoction in a food and then it went wrong. Like, the story is always negative. So I just feel like there are forces and there are powers that operate in a realm that is supernatural or preternatural. Like, it's just not, it doesn't align with the everyday mechanics of how we function as human beings. I absolutely believe that. But I agree with you that I think the way that it gets packaged makes us kind of believe one thing is good as opposed to another, or believe one thing exists as opposed to another. That's why I'm sorry, because in your sensible intellectual mind, I don't understand how you can think how a person can think that holy water or anointing oil is effective, but not think that somebody can be can create a I don't know,
a potion. No, I agree with that too.
Like, you know,
in a sense, I see how those things are effective. I see how those things could work. I just don't like when it's being portrayed as this, I don't know how to explain, this really dark, oh, you can just make someone fly on in the night. All those things don't happen. I don't believe those ones. I really don't, because even that guy I was telling you about in the news, on TV, they said, he said he can disappear if he's in front of a mirror. They brought a fucking full-size mirror on TV. I remember this was on NTA in 2002. They said, oh, yeah, thunder, disappear now. The guy couldn't. He was just looking. They said, disappear. I want you to disappear. He couldn't do it. And I just think these things are what they are. Like, you know, even, so I just, essentially, I think a lot of them can be explained. A lot of them can be taught. And that's why they are shrouded in mystery, because even pastors, what's the miracle behind blowing wind and people are falling? What's the miracle behind Oya Kilome and Mr. Magneto? There's no miracle behind that. It's mind fuck.
It's kind of a misguided effort to prove their potency. For example, this thing now, the thing that actually made me say this was the fact that the potion couldn't, he said that if someone who took this was a thief and they took it, they will become a thief and there's nothing that can be done about it. To me, that was like, crap, like, that's the part. See,
I don't believe that either.
I can believe that this is something that was concocted to help someone stop stealing. I can believe that, but the part of this is irreversible, that's just a thing that is conferred on these potions or on these processes to make it seem effective or to make it seem more important, more fearful and more reverent that's of this thing. But anyway, so after that, he became a big thief, big time thief in the neighborhood. They tried their best to help him. They used all their money to send him to medical school. So the dad, though, and this is the other thing. So the dad, after this happened, now endowed him with his own powers. So the dad gives Oyunusi the ability basically to be a, I guess, divina or whatever on the level that he is. So now, so this is the mom telling this police officer everything in their backstory. And we're back to the present day. And we find out that after that visit to the hospital, when the dad came to see Oyunusi, and warned him to stop using jazz, practicing jazz at the practice and everything, he got into a fight and Oyunusi actually killed his dad. He killed his own father, yep, and that was the extent to which I think just his God complex and nothing can happen to me had reached. It was like, okay, so he just kept on robbing people. The woman, that female police officer, went to go and live with Eunice's mother. That was the one that killed me. I'm sorry, because she was so scared. So after she started investigating him, she refused to be his girlfriend. This guy started hunting her
She
down
refused
because
to what?
she refused to date him.
Oh.
So she became a target, of course, and she so actually
Oh
was
my God.
chasing him. He was chasing her, so she had a target on her back, so she had to go and live with. The only place she saw to hide was Eunice's mother's house. And then he wasn't by then after he
Okay,
killed his dad,
okay.
he wasn't talking to his mom anymore. Like, he
I
was just he
see.
became something else after he killed his dad. He was gone. So yeah, the police tried everything to catch them. They arrest him, he will escape. And this is where the jazz thing comes in. They were arresting him, he will escape. At one point, they even executed him. Meanwhile, Ademola came back to the morgue, to the prison morgue, and resurrected him, and they left. Like, that was just to show you this guy was not going anywhere. Just eventually, and because I want to talk about the history too and the real life things that happened, but just to wrap up the film, the woman who brought the baby at the beginning, like the woman, because she was also kind of a priestess, that's the word I would use, and she was the one who brought, she knew that Oyunsi used had jazz powers, so that was why she brought the woman who the baby wasn't coming out to that hospital.
Wow.
So that woman was the only one who knew the extent of his powers. And she was his friend. Like, she was the one person in everything who was his friend. And I think she just saw everything that was going down, and she was like, this guy has become something else. This is why I also think she was a priestess, because there was a conversation they had that suggested that she kind of helped him lock in his powers in a way. So she did something for him that made him either more powerful or made his powers more like secure. So for whatever reason, they just had that bond and that connection. And I think towards the end of the movie, she started hearing about all the things he was doing and all the
Oh.
people he was killing and all that. And she was like, no, this is too much. So she, while he was in custody, she gave the police his antidotes, like the things that needs to be done, the
Oh,
ritual that needs to be done to, it won't kill him, but it will take away his
wow.
powers. And that's the
Just
best you
speaking.
can do. So they gave him, so it was just a few things they needed to do. So they did that while he was in hospital, and then his powers went away. And it was just so funny to see this guy who for 3 hours, literally, you know the way ordinary is. You can imagine the end when all his powers were taken away at the hospital. He just became nothing. He was like, oh, he started begging him,
Wow.
please, 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 please.
Do you
Because at the end
believe
of
that? Do you believe that?
that was
You'll be begging people and all that one.
at the end, of course, because like you said, I'm sorry, that's the same thing as that Thunder guy getting on TV and not being able to do shit.
But
Like,
he was, Donna wasn't begging nobody though. And he's not even, he wasn't even nobody. Like,
true, fair enough. Okay, Thunder wasn't
yeah,
begging.
I'm just, I just don't,
I
I
believe
don't
that.
know.
Do you know why I believe that? Because he didn't beg when he was arrested. He didn't beg when he was about to be executed. He didn't beg at any other point until the point where the only thing, like his only actual power, at least from the way I'm seeing the way the narrative was supposed to play out, this was the only thing that this was your only actual power that he had. Like, basically, this was you. This was all you. And now there's nothing to you now that this has been taken away.
So
So he
my
cannot
question is, did
rise.
they turn him into like a complete 'cause you see in King of Boys, right, when Enyola, Madame Enyola lost her power,
Yes.
like when she was in prison and everything. Yeah, she was a bit, you could see like that's like
She was a bit
humility, forced
more vulnerable,
humility. Yeah, she was a lot more vulnerable, but you could still see that
the power,
quiet
yeah.
confidence. Yeah, the power. You could tell that that's a powerful person that's been defanged or whatever.
Yeah,
Like, yeah,
exactly.
but And sometimes I feel like the way you're describing this movie, I'm just imagining that they took Oyenusi from like a bad bitch to like some
nothing.
Yeah, to nothing. And I don't really buy that transition, because even in his execution photos, if you Google his name, he's smiling. And to me, it's all these extreme things they kind of do. And it's that's the thing you're talking about, where they always try to say is either or, good or bad, which is very strange. And in a way, actually anti-Yoruba philosophy. Because Yoruba philosophy is not that like good versus bad, good versus evil. It's not really like that. And I feel like, can they show like a bit of complexity in his character that, okay, that will make you kind of hate but love him? But I'm getting this vibe that they didn't do that for Unity. They just made him like, if you're into bravado and whatever, you love him. And then from there, he now becomes this beggar. I don't believe that's how his life went. I don't know. That's just me. Sorry.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I think your thoughts are valid. When you watch a movie,
you are just full.
Your thoughts and feelings are valid.
Do not just pull a Lupita on me.
And they've been taken into consideration.
Can I just pull some white customer service shit on me? She said your thoughts are valid.
Karen, the manager, your thoughts and opinions are valid. You're right. You're actually everything you said is right. But I think if you watched it, you would, and I think if you watched it, you would feel slightly differently.
Okay, only
Odunlade is so fucking likable no matter what. And I think that was why it worked. I think that was why it worked. They didn't make him, because, and the thing is, you don't have to do too much to make a character like Odunlade complex. You understand why people still are in love with a person who is a murderous like killer. So there's not, I think in that way, I think that the casting was kind of part of why it worked. But also I think when you compare the two real life stories, and I'll get to the real life story in a second, but right up until the end, and this is this is a bit of a spoiler, but right up until the end, Oyenusi thought he wasn't going to die, the real Oyenusi, because he still had his powers. In this movie, the powers had been taken away completely from him. And I think that was what you were supposed to get from it, that after 3 hours of seeing this guy do all this, once that one thing was taken away, he was nothing. So the backstory, and I got some of this info from Wikipedia, Pulse NG, and oldnigeria.com.
So I just want to say something to the audience, just so you guys know, Ty is actually a journalist, so... At this point, she's about to pull off some journalist shit. So everybody, fasten your seatbelt and get your notepad.
In the criminal books, it sounds like I said, Dr. Oyenusi was the first like celebrity armed robber in Nigeria in those days. So his crimes, like I said, include armed robbery, carjackings, and murder. But the info on his backstory is really sketchy. So nobody knows when he was born. But it's known that because of the things he had said, it's known that he came from a poor background, which is what led to a life of crime. So his parents couldn't afford secondary school and he has to drop out. And it looks like that was just where things ended. So his first criminal act was an act of love, apparently. So his girlfriend needed some money really badly. So Oyenusi went ahead and snatched a car from someone. He killed the owner of the car and got 400 naira from selling the car that he stole and gave it to his girlfriend. So he was a romantic guy. Rob for love. Listen, I can be okay with a robber.
Stop.
Okay. So his knack for killing victims made people call him Dr. Rob and Kill. And that was the other thing, too. Seems like from the stories I'm reading, he didn't need to kill all those people he killed, but it looked like he just would. Like, that was just part of the course.
So
like,
he was a psychopath?
Maybe he was a psychopath. Some podcasts diagnosing here. Yeah.
Because why do you have to kill someone if you don't have to kill someone? Nigerians, once you even put a gun near them, they'll give you anything you ask for. So why are you killing them? They won't fight you. It's not like Oyibo people or Americans that when you now want to turn, they'll now start jumping. Everybody now jump, start fighting. Nigerians don't do that too. Nigerians like their lives. So why are you killing them? You just maybe he just likes seeing people beg for mercy. Is he a Virgo? I'm kind of worried that he's a Virgo.
Don't kill me. See, yeah, I will check if you're the Virgo. We don't know his birthday, but
I am a bit worried he's a Virgo.
So, like I said, he started in 1970, but his reign of terror actually only lasted a year. Mm-hmm. On March 27th, 1971, Nigerian police force caught him doing an armed robbery operation. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a police officer was killed in that shootout, and that was why immediately, like, they brought down swiftly on him. He was sentenced to death, and he basically ratted out the other people on his team. He said he was not dying alone. He wasn't going down alone or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he ratted everybody else on his team. So this was right after. So remember, this was the 70s. So just a decade and a bit after independence. So then it was like military rule. So they took them to a firing squad at Barbeach. You see all the, and when you watch the video, so this was this original, the video that caught my attention and made me look into this story was that video of him being executed by firing squad on Barbeach in 1971. Yeah. So they said 30,000 Nigerians showed up to see Oyunsi killed.
Wow.
Yep, 30,000 people. And they said people were happy to see the end, to see the end of him. So that's how hated this guy was after 1 year of operating. And if you remember too, like, criminality in Nigeria, kind of the way it is now, especially in, again, busy cities like Lagos, it wasn't the way it was back then. Like, you would actually have, like, that's why, and I think that's also part of why figures like Oyunsi, Shinorambo, Anini, like, those people became very famous, and they became almost like, because there were very few of them that were doing it at the time. Fewer of its type, I think.
I don't know. Okay, so maybe you mean like there were fewer criminals that were robbing, but you know, when we were younger, I remember there used to be so many robberies. Like, I remember one also in my neighborhood, and it was actually someone from the next neighborhood, and the next day was like Christmas or something, and I remember his body being in the middle of the street charred. So, you know, we had, like, when we were younger, it was a lot of robbery.
When you were young, this is like, what, early 90s?
Early 90s. And, I mean, I was born in the late 80s, but even then, you would hear of robberies. Like, I think robberies were, like, the way at the time. Robberies, carjackings. Yeah. I remember then, like, they used to, when my mom or, like, my dad or my family members would have to go to Oshodi, you have to take off your jewelry. So things like that.
Yeah.
Those things were very common. However, apparently those things have evolved to online crime. So it's more of like the online scams now, which honestly, in terms of physical violence, it's a lot better in that way. I remember one time kidnapping became like the thing. But I think when we were young, I'm not kidding, there were kids. Like, every day at school, Amjabas came to house. I don't hear that stuff anymore. Yeah, it was so normal. Like, I have a friend, they were robbed for a week, nonstop. Yes. Like, I had friends who, like, this was in the north or in Kaduna, but that one, it seems more, like, targeted. Because why are they coming to your house every day?
Why are they coming to that same house
every day? Yeah, and all of them ran away, but their dad was like, I'm not going anywhere. So every day they'll come, torture him, take more shit, like, it was crazy. And yes, the dad was like, I would not leave my house, because he's like, I don't know. Well, the explanation we got at the time was, oh, he's the man of the house. Why should he leave his house for someone to come and take over it? But now that I'm older, I'm like, it was probably an enemy he knew and was trying to send a message back that I'm not scared of you.
Yeah. But
there were those things. Even like my husband, like, they were robbed in Ibadan. I feel like Ibadan got a lot of that, those armed robberies. And it was a lot of that, like, coming to your house with a gun.
Well, or cults too, right? Like, because of university.
Yes, and cults as well. Cults, yeah. Those things have evolved. They are less physically violent, I think. Like, that's the vibe I'm getting. Like, and that's what I hear. People say that it's more like, you know, I mean, you still have the carjackings in Lagos traffic and da da da. But for example, like, that idea of somebody coming with a gun to your house and staying there for hours is not as common as it used to be.
Yeah, okay, no, you're right.
Yeah, like, that one is, that armed robbery, that idea, is no longer as common. I think that has gone down. But I just think it has evolved into kidnapping, carjackings. That's what it is now. So, Sorry,
and people are getting more smart and more creative about like targeting. I feel like the targeted stuff is what is really in now. Like, this has happened to us before. Anyway, we've had a maid who brought ambulance to our house.
See,
and they literally had a gun pointed at my grandmother's head. Like, my mom was there. My mom, my grandma, and my uncle, all three of them were in the house. And yeah, she brought she obviously facilitated this in some way, and then she now allowed them beat her up small so that I won't look suspicious.
Oh my god!
Like.
That's evil. Like, I remember when we're younger, there was a night that there was a robbery in our neighborhood, and I will never forget waking up and I see two people in my room. And I used to see this in movies. Yeah, I used to see this in movies where people will not be able to, they'll open their mouths and no sound will come out.
Yeah,
and I didn't know it was possible. Like, I used to think it was fake.
Oh my god!
But that's what happened to me that day. I thought I was screaming, but apparently it was completely muted.
Yeah.
Only for me to realize it was my mom and my aunt. And usually, like, me and my sisters would sleep in the same room. So they were in our room to just stay with us because they had heard that there were robbers in the area. So they just wanted us to be together. And I remember as a child, we're just sitting in the room. And so when they see me, like, opening my mouth, but no sound is coming out, someone comes cover my mouth and they're like, shh. They're robbers and they're literally shooting. Yes. And I obviously tried to peek through the window. Of course, my mom yanked me back in. But I saw them. Like, they were running through some neighbor's home. And then we had some Canadian neighbors. They tried breaking their door. They broke the glass. They couldn't get through. The next morning, everybody was literally out in the street just telling their stories because they tried several homes. But they were only able to get into this one house. I don't remember whose house it was. But I remember by morning, because everybody was like, what the fuck are all the security men? Like, because that was the fear. Like, all the vigilantes were gone. So everybody was like, how did you guys disappear when we needed you the most? But apparently they have these secret traditional ways through, like, hunting and stuff. You know, they have bows and arrows that they've put poison into. Because they don't use guns and all that. They use traditional ways of protection. So they had already planned. I don't know how they met each other in the middle of the night. I really don't know. But you know, they kind of figured who the robbers were. And they went to wait for them at some other end of the street. They did it before the police. And that's how they were able to catch the robbers. And they were able to kill one. And they literally just burnt him right there. And the thing is, he was actually from the neighborhood, which was also wild. Like, not ours. The next neighborhood, not ours. But it was really, that was like my first experience and only really with armed robbery, even though it didn't affect us directly, but that was like, it was like, it just cemented in my brain. And it was very scary because, you know, but I also had a lot of respect for vigilantes at the time, because I was, you know, you see them, they can't, and you know, this is our colonial thinking again. You're like, so that can't speak English, can this one even shoot? Like, you'll be looking at them, you'll be looking down on them, like, look at this mother or whatever. But these men are extremely smart in their own ways, and they actually have a union, like, they have a security union, they know how to call on each other. Remember, there were no cell phones at the time, so how are they able to signal each other, move in a way that they moved, so it was amazing. Like, people were, and of course it was Christmas, people were giving them more food, and like, people were so happy that they kept the community safe. But yeah, that is my own little but yours is like crazy because they're in your house and everything.
Yeah, they were in my house. I'm like, I'm so glad I was.
Did you guys find the house help?
But my she was there.
No, like, did you happened. Like, when you found out it was her, did she run or you were able to?
I can't, what happened to her again? Oh my gosh, I can't remember. They found the armed robbers, like those ones, they found them, but and then her, I can't remember. I think they took her away too. But then eventually, I mean, I know she's out now, like, she's not in prison, like, nothing really happened to her, like, eventually, but they definitely caught the guys, all two or three of them. They even found, I think one had my mom's phone still on him.
Oh my gosh.
When they found him.
Oh, so you guys even got robbed in, like, the GSM era, like, where they were actual cell phones and stuff.
This was 2014, like, or 2015 this happened, this was before my grandma died, so 2013, I think. the psychological effect too is what's devastating. Girl. Like, I can always get your shit back, but yeah. Like, my mom, she really had PTSD after that of incident. Course. And you can imagine my grandma was there. So many different things could have happened. Like, anyways, so yeah, bad. It was very, very frightening.
Yeah.
So he was sentenced to death. 30,000 people showed up to watch the execution. And then, according to Old Niger, it's one of the websites I got this information mm-hmm. from. He was sweating profusely, but he managed to smile all the way to the stakes. So this is the smiling that everybody has become legend, that everybody kind of knows now, that he was smiling all the way to the end. But the people there say he still looked really scared and he couldn't hide the agony on his face. So I actually found an interview that the former commissioner of police of Lagos State, who was assistant superintendent of police during that time, gave about Oyenusi. He said Oyenusi wasn't shocked when he was sentenced to death. He wasn't surprised at all. Said the stories about him smiling to his death are true, and they are really true, and the reasons too are true, that he really thought he wasn't going to die because he thought that bullets could kill him.
Sorry, can I add something real quick?
Mm-hmm.
You know MC Oluwamo? I hope we don't get in trouble for this, but...
Because he's still alive.
Yeah, MC Oluwamo. But you know how they were saying that he's not... He too, like a lot of people have these protections. They'll say, oh, you can't get stabbed, you can't get shot. Mm-hmm. But isn't it the rally in December that he went to go and do and they stabbed him and then they flee to America? It's true now. When I was in Nigeria, they stabbed him now. In fact, my husband and I were joking when we come back. We're like, what if he's on our flight? Because as soon as that man got stabbed, they flew him out. But then he, you know, this myth and legend that, this urban legend that, he cannot be stabbed. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Some of these things are fear tactics. Some of them some of them are potent and true, but they are presented in a way that's a lot more magical and like surreal.
Exactly.
And I feel like a lot of them can be explained and taught. You know, but I also think a lot of them, because it's shrouded in mystery, people just believe it. And so the same thing with MC Oluwamo, and it also reminds me of Troy, the movie, when, because he thought he was the child of a god, he couldn't die, of a goddess. He thought he couldn't die. And I remember when the arrows were going through him, it was Brad Pitt playing Troy. That's one of my favorite movies ever. He kept fighting like nothing was happening. Me, I'm sure if I was the one shooting those arrows, I'd be like, fuck, he really is a god. Like, he's not dying. I would have been afraid. I'd be like, whoa, after this arrow, me, I'm running, because it's coming to kill me. But if you see the way his mortality just showed up in like 5 seconds, first thing, he dropped to his knee, then he's still fighting. Before he knew, he's dead, like every one of us. So that's another thing I'm trying to say. Like, Oyenusi, maybe he was holding on to that immortality. I'm sure a side of him was like, what if this shit isn't true? And we saw that fucking bullet took him out. So
and that was the same fear people said he had on his face. Like, you're smiling, but you're sweating profusely.
You're conflicted. You're conflicted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's very funny to see those things just play up where you're like, so this thing was never even true. So,
yeah.
Wow. So, would you have gone to the execution?
Me? probably, to be honest, because I'm a psycho. But probably, because me, I love true crime, so that kind of shit up close. I would have bought a front row seat ticket, and also to make sure, if I lived in Lagos at the time, please let me see with my eyes or with my own.
I think that's why I love people went,
and that's why people went. That was why a lot of people went. They really just wanted to see that this guy was actually dead. So after that, after his execution, people still were still so scared that his own people would retaliate, that they stayed locked up for days after he was dead. They stayed locked up in their houses. Nobody came out for days. So the fear was so deep that there was a movie that was made 6 years later by a veteran. At the time, he was a veteran Nollywood filmmaker called Eddie Ugomba, and he wanted to make a movie about Oyenusi. And no one showed up to the auditions. Nobody wanted to touch this movie. Nobody wanted to be involved in the movie in any kind of way. And it was because of this fear that they had, that either his people would retaliate in some way, or that the, I don't know, like the curse of Oyenusi, whatever, like, would get them. So the fear was so much that about this guy, like, no one wanted to show up to act in the movie. The Eddie Ugomba guy had to act in the movie himself as he had to make the movie. But he said, no, but you know, I really respect this guy. And so anyway, you know me, I did my deep dives, whatever. Now I know everything about every single movie this guy has ever made.
Wow. He's one
of those people who makes incredible. He made a lot of movies in Nigeria, coming, I think, starting around the 60s, just about the condition of Nigeria, things that were happening politically. So he made a movie about the death of Murtala Mohammed. And he actually had, what was crazy was, he was actually there when Murtala Mohammed was assassinated. Mm-hmm. And he was the only journalist that actually was allowed to get up close to the car. Wait, because his friend, Eddie Uboma. So Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, and then Uboma, U-G-B-O-M-A-H.
Okay, Eddie Uboma, I can see.
Yeah, so he actually passed away, I think.
Just last year.
And so I was so glad to, like, in my research, I was able to just find interviews that people had done with him in, you know, his last few years of life. He was never really, I don't think, to me, he never really reached the level of success that I think is worthy of someone who was so dedicated to documenting the Nigerian culture in that era. Like, all of his movies have to do are about social, like, social and political things in Nigeria. So yeah, the death of Murtala Mohammed, that movie, he was one of the only journalists when Murtala Mohammed was assassinated that was actually allowed to go right up to the car. Like, he was actually right next to the car, and he took a photo of Murtala Mohammed, his assassinated, like, body in the back of the car, and that photo is the cover of the movie.
Really?
Insane.
Wow. I'm like in this whole world now.
Oh yeah, look him up. So everyone, like, you look him up, everyone listening to this, look him up. He's a very, I think, accomplished filmmaker, even though he never really got, to me, he didn't get the kind of praise and stuff that was worthy of him. But if you look, he made about 7 films. All of them are about something specific like this. So
yes, he's very, like, like, his stuff is very historical and very specific. This is so very
interesting. That Murtala Mohammed one was the one that fucked me up, because he used the actual photo that he took at the assassination as the cover of the film. Like I said, nobody wanted to act in this movie, so he played the role of the of Oyunsi himself in a movie called The Rise and Fall of Oyunsi. It came out in 1979. So if anyone has a way that we can watch this movie, anywhere we can buy it, like, please let me know. I actually would love to watch the original. So he got some blowback for this, for making this movie, actually, because the movie revealed the secrets of officers in the military and Nigerian officials who had allegedly been backing Oyunsi. So that's the other thing too. When we're talking about all this, oh, this person is powerful, this person has jazz, a lot of that is just, I have police officers that are in my pocket.
Exactly.
And that's the reality. Like, a lot of this shit can just be explained by just real human, like, corruption. And yeah, so his life was threatened, his store was looted. All these things happened to him after he made this movie. Yeah, but he still made the movie. And I was even just watching, I watched a bunch of videos of interviews with him. He was going through, like, his archives. He still had the films, like the film reels. So actual film on a reel from some of these movies. And it was just incredible to see, like, that piece of Nigerian history that was just, because we don't do, like you said, we don't do archiving very well. We don't do documenting very well. We don't document ourselves very well at all. So these things really determine the way our stories are told. And they really do have a lot to do with just shaping the way we perceive ourselves. Like, the Nigeria of, what kind of access do I have to the way Nigeria was in 1970, other than, like, this type of thing? Like, I have no idea what was happening. I have no idea what was going on then. So it was just, I really love that he did that.
I love that. I love that. That's someone we should definitely keep on our on our radar.
So yeah, that's the movie. That's my story. That's Oyunsi's story.
Wow.
Yeah. Was there anything, like, you would change? So this is, like, the movie that I watched was the Odunlade version. So was there anything? I know you had some problems with the way you was there anything you
Honestly, based on, like, how it happened, I'm happy with how everything ended.
So guys, we talked a bit about our robbery stories, so, or our, like, crime stories. It was not, this was kind of more about robbery, but I think we can open it up to just any kind of criminal activity if you've been a victim of, either in Lagos or anywhere else, if you have any kind of stories like that. We would like to hear them.
We are on social media. Our Instagram is to be continued pod. Our Twitter is to be continued P. And our email is tbcpodcast20@gmail.com. And
I think that's everything. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you. And to God be the glory.